Right.
Someone's
yeah,
got
build it and they will come.
I noticed you didn't bring that last week.
What?
Oh, the
candy. Candy.
That's right. I looked over the other day.
What?
The sound is on. The House Committee on Education will come to order.
Is she okay?
Uh-huh. Well, welcome to the House Committee on Education. I know we have many guests in the building today. It's wonderful to have you with us, and I would extend a special welcome to the young people of all ages, but particularly the young people who are still school-aged who are visiting us today. This is your capital, and it's a great way to learn about how decisions are made that impact you every day, and I hope this is the first of many of your visits to the Capitol, including maybe someday when you will run for office and sit in these chairs, and we will come and talk to you about what we'd like you to do. Before we open our first public hearing, I'd like to ask that everyone in the room take out your cell phone. I know you all have them, and turn them off. Not just to vibrate, but actually off. It interferes with the sound system, and it's great to be able to focus on what people here are saying. And with that, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2544, and I would invite Representative Peter Buckley to come and introduce it to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County. And it's good to see the Education Committee continues its tradition of being very hard to call to order. Madam Chair, members, I bring before you a bill today, House Bill 2544, which was brought to my attention about a year ago. The title of the bill is No Oregon Child Left Inside. And when I told my wife that I was working on this piece of legislation, I gave her the title. And as soon as I said the title, she said, I'm for it. Because our kids have become increasingly disconnected from the natural world at a time when their leadership in this area is more important than ever. Our generation will be leaving behind a host of environmental challenges. Addressing these problems will fall upon the shoulders of our kids. We should at least prepare them for the difficult choices that lie ahead. Now, this bill, it's important to emphasize, this bill does not impose any new requirements upon school districts. It merely develops an environmental literacy plan that outlines the manner in which we engage our children in the world around them. And you see, before it's a task force, I wish it wasn't a task force. I tried to get it called a project. I tried to get it called all sorts of different names. They kept coming back saying, we have to call it a task force. But it's a tool to move in a direction I sincerely believe our state should move in. You know, the most effective learning often occurs when kids don't realize that they're learning. Environmental education is interdisciplinary. It includes the natural sciences, the social sciences, humanities, and mathematics. Environmental education will not steal class time from core subjects, but instead will supplement them. It will make learning those valuable skills even more enjoyable for our children, while simultaneously preparing them to tackle the challenges that face our world. Developing an environmental literacy plan is what this bill is all about. It will allow Oregon to access federal grant monies. And this is, you know, what the request I've made of you colleagues is to send things to Ways and Means that actually might be able to bring in additional money to the state. And I believe this is an idea that can bring in additional money to our state. We must take advantage of every dollar we can find in this economic climate. And House Bill 2544 will better enable us to provide our children with a quality education, even in tight times. And colleagues, I want to draw your attention to two amendments that we're bringing forward as well. The first, the -1 amendment, is simply to get the title of the bill into the act. It's a long amendment. It has some whereases. But basically, what we want to do is basically make sure people understand this is the No Oregon Child Left Inside Act. Because, again, that it's a great summary of what we're trying to accomplish. And -2 is a slight change in terms of the membership of the task force that would help put this together. And I'm sure that members of this committee will have ideas on you guys don't have the amendments before you, I'm sure I'm jumping ahead. But when you get to them, in the future, when you see these amendments, that's what they're all about. One is just to get the title in, kind of the reason for behind the bill. The second amendment has to do with the personnel involved. And I'm sure you will have a debate on who you think is the best personnel to be involved in this, to bring this forward. I greatly appreciate your time and consideration, Madam Chair and members. And we have folks who are kind of lined up behind me who can answer questions in terms of the coalition that's been built to bring this bill forward, how they see this evolving over the next several years for our states, and get down to the benefits that this will bring to our kids. So if I can duck out and leave the hard questions to them, I appreciate it, and I'll go back to cutting budgets that are important to all of you.
Thank you, Representative Buckley, for your time and your service here previously and the other difficult work you have to do. And colleagues, we are working on getting the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments so that you can all see them. Any brief questions for Representative Buckley before we let him escape?
Madam Chair, just a comment. Peter told me off on the side it wasn't going to be public, but he misses us on this. Very nice.
Except for Roblin. Sorry.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you. I was hoping that I have an opportunity to say, because I also think, and I don't know if they're a part of the coalition, but from my perspective, with things that are happening with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, I would think that there are people there who would be very helpful here, and also people from the Department of Agriculture, just because we've got the school, farm-to-school programs, we've got the Young Hunters programs. All of those are about environmental issues, and I hope that we think about this being a bigger coalition as we move forward in talking about the environment and how we interact with it. So I appreciate a lot bringing it here, and I look forward to a great discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Roblin, I couldn't agree more. The broader coalition, the more people we get involved, the better.
Thank you, Representative Beth. Oh, Representative Kopp.
Oh, thank you. And on that same theme but different, and I'm looking at the current list, Representative Buckley, of the nine members that are supposed to be on the task force, and it lists a representative of a school district, and I'm pretty passionate about teachers. I wish when we do these task force, and they kind of come down the traditional line as a legislative council writes our bills, this is what a task force looks like. I wish we would have more than maybe a teacher on a task force, because there's a tremendous amount of things that our teachers are already doing and have a voice. But when you have them sitting at the table with people from Fish and Wildlife, then I think we have a little more of a balanced voice.
Madam Chair, Representative Kopp, thank you. And I leave this bill in your good hands. You will be discussing these issues in terms of who actually should constitute this task force. And I very much agree with you that there has to be a teacher's voice on this, someone who's on the front line.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, could we have Paul Cathcart and Bob Olson and Tracy Price, please? Thank you. Welcome. And if for the record, you'll just state your name and then share with us your comments.
Chair Gelzer, members of the Education Committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak on House Bill 2544 today. For the record, my name is Tracy Price, and I'm the director of the Healthy Waters Institute, which is a program of Oregon trout. And I do want to publicly thank Representative Buckley. It was about a year ago that we started talking about this bill, and so to see where it is now, it really wouldn't have been possible without his support. So I definitely thank him and appreciate his time and energy spent on this. So I sit before you today on behalf of our board of directors for Oregon Trout, our members, and of the growing No Oregon Child Left Inside coalition, which currently stands at 72 diverse state organizations representing more than 82,000 Oregonians. We're here to support this bill for a variety of reasons, but mostly because of the fact that it would establish an environmental literacy plan for our students to ensure that they graduate as environmentally literate citizens and are prepared to address the natural resource challenges that are going to definitely face them in the future. My position in a statewide organization, I'm also a co-chair board member of the Environmental Education Association of Oregon, and on the steering committee for the Sustainable Oregon Schools Initiative. And wearing these different hats has really allowed me to see examples of incredible activities and programs that are happening throughout the state to support getting our youth outside and reconnected to the natural world and the communities within which they live. And although these efforts are happening at the school level, supported by nonprofits, agencies, these efforts are totally disconnected. So you have really great examples, but they're all kind of turning their own wheels and spinning in their own directions. And the reason is because as a state, we don't really have the infrastructure to support a common strategic vision in guiding all of our efforts forward. This is compounded by the fact that our youth have really been utterly disconnected from the natural world. From 1997 to 2003, the number of youth ages 9 to 12 participating in outdoor activities declined by 50%. This is a problem. We can't really expect youth to grow up caring about the places in which they live when they're so disconnected from them. So really creating an environmentally sound future is a task for all of us, but especially for our youth, because they'll be charged with just making the decisions tomorrow that impact the health and prosperity of Oregon. So the three things I wanted to point out are how this legislation will ultimately benefit education, our environment, and our economy. So the way that it'll benefit our education, like Representative Buckley was saying, is it's really an opportunity to use cross-curricular and interdisciplinary education with the environment as this integrating context for learning to reconnect our youth to the communities in which they live. Environmental education has also been shown to have benefits, including better test scores on standardized tests in math and science and reading. It's showed that students can be more enthusiastic about what they're learning about and that they're better able to apply things like science to real-world scenarios. It helps them to think strategically better and be critical thinkers, creative problem solvers, all that thing that will ultimately benefit our world tomorrow. And that's in addition to all of the health benefits, you know, as they relate to obesity and ADD, ADHD, which are definitely big issues for our youth today. This will definitely work to improve, and like Representative Buckley said, this is not creating any kind of new mandates or requirements. This will help teachers satisfy existing curricular benchmarks and also help our students to satisfy graduation requirements. So working within the context of education requirements as they are. The other thing it will support are opportunities for teacher professional development, which is some place that I know that Oregon is in need of a little bit of improvement, so this is another means to support those opportunities for teachers. The way that this can help improve our natural resources is by building a framework to support the reconnection of our youth to their local parks, their local streams, local farms, forests, and just get them, you know, caring a little bit more about those natural resources that are surrounding them. And as far as our economy goes, not only is this an opportunity to better prepare our students with skills that they'll need to enter the growing green job workforce, which they're expecting, you know, there could be 37 million new jobs by the year 2030 in energy and energy efficiency jobs. So it's really important that we prepare our students today for those jobs tomorrow. But again, like Representative Buckley said, this creating an environmental literacy plan will position Oregon to be eligible for federal dollars through the No Child Left Inside Act. And so essentially when this passes, which it will, it's in the same place where No Child Left Behind sits, which will be reauthorized. And when that happens, there's a $100 million fund that would be created for environmental education to be distributed to states that have environmental literacy plans in place. So as long as we have the plan in place, we'll be eligible to receive those dollars. So that's a very big selling point at this point in a really tight state budget. And this is really, you know, asking $50,000 to support the convening of this task force to develop the plan is a really small amount of money, you know, compared to what it can leverage for our state. And there's really no better time than now to make a smart investment in tomorrow. So, again, I thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. And maybe let's take testimony from the whole panel, and then we can have questions for everyone at once.
Okay, Kira Gelzer, committee members, Bob Olson with the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. I don't have a lot to add to what has been said, but I did want to indicate that those of us that engage in outdoor activities see the need and interest in this sort of education and having this literacy increased, and we greatly support that. In my own life, when I have time, I'm a catch-and-release trout fisherman, and I certainly am in the experience of the outdoors and have those activities and look forward to being there. And I think you appreciate the need for increased stewardship of our natural resources and our special places. And so that's one of the things that's really important to us. Our executive director, Paul Cathcart, has some specific examples of the association's activities that he would like to relate.
Sure. Thanks, Bob. Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Paul Cathcart. I'm the executive director for the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. And in case you're not familiar with our organization, we are an angling conservation organization based in Milwaukee, Oregon. And we are comprised of 14 chapters that are scattered throughout the state, and we have over 1,400 members. And our mission is to protect and enhance fisheries and their habitats for today and in the future. From that mission flows four directional themes, and I stated them in my testimony here. And among one of those themes, educating anglers and children ranks equally with our drive to protect river rights, advocate for fish and habitats, as well as reduce global climate change. So we're a lot broader than maybe what our organizational name kind of projects. And to this end, we are applying our association's 50 years of legacy in boating and angling and fisheries habitat restoration by introducing families with little or no fishing or boating experience to experience nature and learn the environment in a variety of ways. And I listed a couple bullet points. What we're doing now is working with the ODFW in 75 schools in Portland in regarding the life cycle of trout and salmon. It's what we call the Eggs to Fry program, where we provide equipment, and ODFW is a partner in supplying eggs, and in a two-month demonstration project for young children to understand the life cycle, and then when they finally mature to in a few months to fry, then they reintroduce into the streams. We're also, some of our chapters in the southern Oregon coast, we have a number of events teaching children the value of getting outdoors and involving families in habitat restoration projects, as well as having free angling days for young children. We're also active in seeking grants from foundations that would help support the hiring of additional staff to design environmental education programs, reconnecting families with the outdoors and all the communities where an association chapter exists. This effort manifests the principle that introducing children to get outdoors, to exercise, play, and experience their natural world is an important tool in the battle to prevent obesity, alleviate attention deficit disorder, and address other related health problems. So the Association of Northwest Steelheaders enthusiastically support House Bill 2544. Thank you.
Thank you all for your testimony. Are there any questions for this panel? Representative Dimbrough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, thanks to all of you who worked on this. This is a great concept, and I'm really looking forward to the work of the task force. I'm especially interested in seeing how this work can align with the new graduation requirements, and I'm really intrigued with the field-based aspect of it and how that can be used to work with applied math and, you know, geometry and that kind of thing for mapping of habitat, et cetera, I think could be really useful. One of the things that you referred to, Tracy, was green-collar jobs and young people's interest in green-collar jobs. And one of the things that I would hope that the task force will address is ways to expose young people to green-collar jobs, to a variety of, you know, people working in settings that, you know, either in the field or wherever, that would expose them to, that there are futures for them within these industries, you know, including, you know, technician jobs, things that perhaps won't require a baccalaureate, but, you know, maybe kind of skills-based technician jobs within the green industries. I don't know if that whole career side of things is something that's envisioned in the plan.
Mm-hmm.
Chair Gelzer and Representative Gumbaugh. I definitely think, especially with career-related learning standards, that there's a really great opportunity to introduce students to those opportunities. And I think that's where having a framework, you know, that shows and supports how all of these different community partners and professionals can plug in to support this kind of learning for students is completely essential. And I definitely think that the through career-related learning standards, I mean, that's a great way to introduce students to those jobs.
Great.
Are there further questions for this panel? Representative Maurer.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. My question is, you know, $50,000 isn't a lot, but I'm wondering what else are we going to cut to get the $50,000? And, conceptually, it's all fine. I just have problems with $50,000. I mean, essentially, that's not even an FTE. That's a half an FTE in some school. And, you know, I was wondering, is there a way we can get private money to fund the literacy group, or, the environmental literacy group, to develop a plan to allow us to apply for the grant money?
Chair Gelzer, Representative Maurer, I've definitely been in pretty close communication with the Gray Family Fund, which is set up through the Oregon Community Foundation. They're one of the primary private foundations that's helping to support environmental education programs currently. Last year, they had requests amounting $4 million from program providers to support environmental education, of which they were really only able to support about $1 million. But their interests are completely in addressing the things that are state barriers to environmental education and supporting these opportunities for our youth. And they're fully aware of what we're trying to do with creating the environmental literacy plan. So I do think that there's an opportunity to leverage foundation dollars as well as the federal dollars through the No Child Left Inside. And although $50,000 is a lot in a tight budget right now, the fact that it could leverage $1 million more, I think, is a really great opportunity and one that we shouldn't forget, you know, while looking at the $50,000 that we're asking for. The amount, too, is really, it's mostly to support the convening of the task force and to pay for, you know, their time and travel and stuff that's spent on this. So, I mean, I think that we could work to find a match to get there.
Okay. And you have follow-up?
Because the bill doesn't allow you to accept grant money to pay for the task force. I think that would be helpful. I just, quite frankly, $50,000 is $50,000, and when you've got a $2 billion hole, it's going to be difficult.
Thank you. Representative Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm getting scared. You and I are asking the same questions a lot.
You know what? We're not that far away.
I had asked the question that you just did of the bill's carrier as it was circulating around in the House, and got encouragement, but the same kind of answer. Can you tell us a little bit more about the $100 million, if I made the note correctly, that you suggested is going to be in the No Child Left Behind as it gets renewed? I don't know enough detail about that to know if that's how close to a guaranteed thing that is. And understand that I'm coming from a position of being very supportive of this undergrad degree in plant ecology and worked at an outdoor school for a long time and was really dismayed that my kids, as they were going through the Beaverton School District, one of them got through before outdoor school went away and the other one did not have it. Mm-hmm. So I'm very supportive and very curious about this other money.
Chair Gelder, Representative Parker. The $100 million has actually been marked in a climate bill. So, and that's strictly for the No Child Left Inside part of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. So it's a separate fund from the No Child Left Behind fund, but it has been marked in a climate bill. So the timing for when the No Child Left Behind and the Elementary and Secondary Education Act will be reauthorized, and then the timing for when that money will actually be available, the timeline has not been solidified for that.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions for this panel? All right, thank you. Thank you very much. Next, could we have Kylene Stone of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department and Amanda Rich of the Oregon Recreation and Park Association?
Yeah. Just to be confusing.
I'm sorry. Our technology guys came up with that.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you for coming, and if you'll just introduce yourselves for the record.
Sure. For the record, I'm Kylene Stone. I'm Assistant Director for Recreation Programs and Planning at the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Do you want me to do my testimony and then Amanda? Does that work? Okay. Chair Chair Gelser, members of the committee, I'm here to support House Bill 2544, which will establish a task force to develop Oregon Environmental Literacy Program. The Oregon Parks and Recreation Department is named in the bill, and we will gladly participate in the task force. In fact, we really welcome this opportunity to work with our colleagues in the Department of Education. This will be an opportunity for us to establish some longer-term working relationships that we've been trying to forge for quite some time. Parks and recreation providers, both at the state park level, at the federal level, at the local level, we've long recognized the importance and value of the natural resources that we are entrusted to protect. We know protection can't happen unless people who live and work in the environment really understand it, and they understand how their interactions with that environment affect it. Our research that we've done at the Parks and Recreation Department through our statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation plan has really confirmed that Oregonians, as we've moved into the modern age, we've really chosen pursuits that are much more indoor related for both work and recreation. And as a result, parents themselves have really lost that opportunity to expose their children to the outdoor world. And, you know, the consequences for that really have repercussions at the macro level in terms of people's sensitivity to the environment and the environmental risks that that can create, and at the micro level as it relates to people's personal health, particularly as the increases in our sedentary lifestyles bring on health risks. At Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, we have staff expertise to advise the task force in curriculum development. The other thing that we have that we offer that we're happy to be participating with, we actually have the state park properties that we can open up and that can play a key role in providing appropriate outdoor laboratories for children around the state to access and for their teachers to use. We have access to the state's premier natural and historic settings. We're responsible for the entire Oregon coastline, the entire Oregon shore. We have parks and trails in every ecosystem in the state. And we have parks that trace the significant tribal settlement and statehood history in Oregon. For many of our resources, we've already developed within the Parks and Recreation System curricula and programs designed to enhance the visitor experience when they're in the parks through our interpretive programs and also through cooperative nonprofit organizations like the Shampooey Promise program that teaches kids, or the Let's Go Camping program that Tryon Creek operates in conjunction with the Friends of Tryon Creek and REI, which is really a private concern that has a stake in this as well. We provide opportunities to see and learn about renewable energy solutions. At our most current state parks, we just opened Crissy Field down in southern Oregon, and then last year we opened Stubbs Stewart State Park. Both of those have intriguing areas where we can show kids about in how to use sustainable practices in their lives. Also, our parks are natural choices to stage service learning projects. And so as a part of this, I think service learning is one of the objectives. In those cases, it really is a win-win. We obviously get service projects taken care of at parks, and youth learn skills and principles of service and volunteerism. Our partners in community parks and recreation offer after-school and weekend programming and facilities that would directly support this kind of an environmental literacy curricula and service learning, and we support any amendments that would add local parks and recreation representatives to the task force. We're eager to embark on this partnership, and we look forward to supporting a more formal plan for environmental education in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Amanda.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. My name is Amanda Rich, and I'm here. I'm the executive director. I'm used to saying I'm here representing because I had many years as a contract lobbyist and now have only wear one hat, and that is the executive director of the Oregon Recreation and Park Association. And I'm representing today park and recreation professionals that work for city, district,
county and state parks from around Oregon. We are proud to be a member of the No Oregon Child Left Inside Coalition, have supported the federal bill that Tracy told you about since its inception, and are very excited to be here today supporting House Bill 2544. You know, this hits on two very, very important points to us. One is the promotion of child health and wellness. It's been part of our platform for years, and we've supported efforts like increased physical education requirements, and this falls right into line with that. And then also promoting good stewardship of our environment and our resources. So it's right up our alley. Also, in terms of, we have many you've heard about what state parks offers in terms of environmental education and the properties that that they have. Our local park and recreation agencies, as I mentioned, our city, county, district agencies also provide environmental education programs and also have properties that could serve as wonderful laboratories for this sort of education. We are the folks that asked for the addition of a local park and recreation agency representative, and I think that may be the dash two amendment that Representative Buckley alluded to earlier, and we would hope that you would support that, and again just would urge your support of this, and we look forward to being a part of this very worthy project.
Thank you. Are there questions for these two witnesses? Representative Dimbrough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question for both of you, and it goes to Representative Maurer's question about the budget for this task force. Would you say that your organizations would be willing to absorb the costs of having a representative on this task force?
Chuck Elser, Representative Dimbrough. For Parks and Recreation Department, yes, we would absorb our participation in this within our own budget.
Mm-hmm. Amanda, you think?
Yeah, for the record, Amanda Rich, Oregon Recreation Park Association, and Chuck Elser, Representative Dimbrough. Yes, I believe that I can speak on behalf of my board and say that we would happily support a local park and recreation agency representative on the task force.
Mm-hmm. Great. I suspect that's going to be the case for everyone on the task force.
Thank you. Are there further questions for this panel? Thank you both very much. Next, and I'm calling people up in pairs, even though you may not have come to the building together. Could I have Morgan Allen and Madison Moskowitz, please?
You start these lobbyists young.
Thank you, and welcome, Madison. If you'll read your name into the record and share your comments, we will be happy to hear them.
For the record, my name is Madison Moskowitz, and I'm almost 13. I'm in 7th grade. I go to Sunnyside Environmental School in Southeast Portland. I am urging you to support No Oregon Child Left Inside. My school, SES, has a deep-rooted belief that children of all ages should have a connection with nature through their education. All SES middle school classes go on a field trip once a week, and more times than not, we are outdoors all day. Four times a month, we pull ivy, plant native plants, and other work that may be hard but has fantastic rewards. By the time an 8th grader graduates high school, he or she must have memorized at least 25 native plants. Environmental literacy will become increasingly important as issues such as global warming, water conservation, and population growth pressure our resources. The way our lifestyles are shifting demands new skills from the new generation. The way my school teaches is supplementing basic curriculum with significant progressive thinking. I know that once I apply for a job, I will be entirely comfortable with everything earth-friendly. This information is crucial, yet has not fully made its way into Oregon schools' curriculum. Many kids I know are well aware of where the local Taco Bell is, but not the history of the Columbia River. They know how to beat their favorite video game, yet do not know the Oregon State Tree. We should all know that. From 1997 to 2003, as Tracy mentioned, the number of children in the United States ages 9 to 12 engaging in outdoor activities such as hiking, walking, fishing, beach play, and gardening declined 50%. I'm sure we've all heard of the obesity epidemic. Well, this dramatic decrease in activity can only contribute. No Oregon Child Left Inside will make sure that kids learn appropriate measures to re-relate them to the outdoors. Kids will learn the steps to apply their knowledge to real-life situations. I know that when I go into high school, college, and apply for a job, I will be ready for whatever is thrown my way, whether it be solve for Y or name five Oregon rivers. I will be prepared. But without the help of no Oregon child left inside, other children will not be as well equipped. Thank you.
Thank you. And Morgan.
Chair Gelser and members of the committee, for the record, Morgan Allen, Department of Education. I don't know how I could possibly follow that. Give it a shot. I'm actually here today speaking on behalf of my boss, Superintendent Susan Castillo, who supports this piece of legislation and this concept. I just mentioned a few reasons she supports it in no particular order. I think most of them have been covered, so I won't go into them in detail, but the opportunity to leverage some funds for our schools from the federal government. We always are looking for ways to maximize resources here in Oregon, so that's a great component of this bill. This was also mentioned, the sort of green economy and the changing nature of jobs in Oregon. We want to prepare our next generation of students to sort of take advantage of those green collar or natural resource and technology-based jobs, and we think this can be a sort of a first step to help move us in that direction. The childhood obesity and the lack of outdoor schools and other programs in Oregon in our public schools to engage students in physical activity, outdoor activities, Saturday academies, those types of things. We hope this is an opportunity to sort of get that back on the radar screen for a lot of folks. Stewardship of Oregon, I think that was mentioned. Just sort of people knowing what the natural heritage here in Oregon is and our students learning that. And then the last thing I'll just mention is, frankly, if this is a direction that we want the State Board of Education to go or the Department of Education, we need some guidance. We don't have this type of expertise at the Department of Education. I think that's why you saw the makeup of the task force includes people from Parks and Rec and other agencies, Department of Fish and Wildlife, that can sort of give us some insights that, to be perfectly honest, we don't have. We don't have, sort of natural resource education experts at the department, and we believe their input on this task force would be invaluable and probably would also help inform the State Board of Education and the legislature if you decide to take some of the recommendations of the task force and put them into law, or the board decides to put them into rule. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And before I take questions, I just want to say, Madison, I think that you are a tremendous ambassador for your school and for these programs, and demonstrate the poise and robustness of that curriculum, your confidence, and really great testimony. Thank you for coming up and doing it so well.
Thank you.
Are there questions for these witnesses? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just would like to first echo those comments. I'm very impressed, Madison, and very nice job. Question for Morgan. Last week we listened to a bill, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, it was a technology-related task force. And in that, I believe there was no fiscal. There was not a dollar amount related to that, and the expenses
7,000.
Okay, very very minimal, and in that there was not reimbursement for the participants on the task force, and I see a difference in this particular, and I know that we're talking about different projects here. I guess really the heart of my question is, I think it's a great idea, and I think you're probably not going to find a lot of resistance. The concern is about the dollars, and that's something that we're very cognizant of right now. Is there a way, and I kind of grin as I say this, Morgan, is there a way that ODE can absorb yet another task force without that $50,000 attached? And I remember your sponge analogy from last week, and I guess how full is the sponge getting? Because I think this $50,000, at least for me, is a critical piece of this bill.
That's a very good question, Chair Gelser and Representative Springer. And just to kind of give you, I believe the fiscal we turned in on this bill to the Legislative Fiscal Office, and they obviously haven't weighed in with their official, but I'm just glancing at the numbers here. It's about $37,000 is what our staff estimated it would cost to implement this. I think in the instance of the school computer task force that Representative Beyer proposed, and you heard last week, the difference between that bill and maybe some of these other task forces generally is we worked quite a bit with them to craft very
very narrow language. They had a similar piece of legislation during the last session that had a little bit larger fiscal. It got caught in the Ways and Means process. We met with Representative Beyer and her staff and Superintendent Golden in the interim. Sort of, we got that language in there to take out the compensation and other things to really drive the cost down. It's clear we have a volunteer group of folks that are willing to do it on their own dime, so to speak. This one's a little bit different, bringing in some new people and probably going to require a higher level of staffing from our agency and involve more people at our department. And, you know, there are costs in there that weren't in the other bill, those types of sort of mileage and reimbursement and meeting costs that we were sort of able to eliminate from the other one. I think, you know, the good thing is it does have the $50,000 in there, and that should be more than plenty for us to do the job, maybe have a little bit left over. But we are kind of like a sponge. We can, under normal circumstances, we can absorb some new work, and you'd probably hear this from any other state agency and any other committee. You know, we can do a couple task force, we can do a couple other things and absorb them with our existing resources, but you start sort of piling on 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 of those things, and then you need maybe a staff person or two that might just solely work on those types of projects. So I think the $50,000 in the bill is more than plenty for us to get the job done.
Representative Roblin.
I also wanted to compliment Madison, and next time, because I sit on agriculture and natural resource also, always bring a teachable moment. So your ivy or some of the other things you've pulled out the week before, you know, show them what kinds of things they could pick out when they're out there fixing the environment. Just a helpful hint that one of the other things you can add value to all the rest of these people up here, so they know the kinds of things that shouldn't be growing out there that you know about that maybe many of the people up here don't know. So one little addition. And I guess the thing that I would say to the Department of Ed, you know, there's a lot of research that's been done. Dr. Gardner probably is the biggest with respect to the types of intelligences. He lists this as a separate type of intelligence working with the environment. It should be what all of us, as we go through education and we learn things, at least understand the theories behind that and how some people have their natural way of thinking involves this almost every time they think about how to relate to the world. And we've done that with staff, we've done it with students, and we find that there really are real differences in the way we relate to the world and think about it. And I would encourage, as we start having these conversations, to look at some of the research that's been done around how people learn in particular, and how building that into any kind of curriculum or anything we do would be helpful. So that's just a stit. And we'll have to look at how can we get some foundation money that comes in to help with this, as opposed to having to strictly pay for it from our funds, because we aren't going to have those monies. And I think that goes along with his. And so if there's a way for you to think about, can the agency take money to direct it, what do we have to put in here to do that, I would hopefully you could give us some help with that.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Mayor.
Madison. So how many plants have you memorized? You have another year, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure, but I could, if you put me in a native plant garden, I'm sure I could identify at least 15 to 20 plants. So
you have some work to do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Thank you both very much, and particularly thank you, Madison.
Thank you.
And you too, Morgan. We really appreciate you.
Well, I had a minor in botany.
Yeah.
And next we have...
Where'd you go to school?
See if you can top that. Elise Brown and Andy Miller.
Actually, it wasn't official, but I took science education in all my science classes. Not all. Most of my science classes were in botany.
Yeah.
Accident.
Welcome. The bar is high.
Once you get started in the track, yeah.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andy Miller. I'm the senior policy analyst for Oregon Business Association. One of the first things you have to remember about being a dancer or performer is never follow a child or a cute puppy. So I'll do my best. Ensuring a world-class education system for all Oregonians is critical to the state's ability to compete in the global economy and maintain a high quality of life for all Oregonians. Investments are needed at every stage of the education continuum, from pre-K to higher education. The consistent instability in K-12 education, plus state and federal education mandates, have forced districts to focus only on academic achievement. There needs to be a commitment to focusing on the whole student. This is an excellent bill. I was thrilled when Tracy brought this to our committee. I'm not going to go into the explanation of the project, as you're well aware what that is. As Tracy would tell you, first thing I said to her is, what's the fiscal? And since the original concept, it's been winnowed down, so I think it's quite manageable. Business, of course, supports this because of the jobs will be available in the green economy, and we really need to have these folks aware. But there's something that those of you who sit with me every Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock on the Health Committee might look at Section 2, Sub B, contribute to students establishing a healthy lifestyle by making outdoor experiences part of the regular school curriculum and creating programs to promote healthy lifestyles through outdoor recreation and sound nutrition. And that's part of the bill that I haven't seen emphasized very much here, and I think that's a huge part of it. We're putting a lot of money into education. We really need to send healthy kids to school, and I'll hammer that point until June 30th. Oregon Business Association urges you to pass House Bill 2544. Thank you.
Thank you. Elise.
Sure. Chair Gelser, members of the committee, Elise Brown, and here this afternoon representing the Oregon Coast Aquarium, and also I represent the American Diabetes Association. So certainly the comments that were made previously I totally agree with, and ADA supports this bill also. But speaking real specifically now for the Oregon Coast Aquarium, and we fully support House Bill 2544 to create this environmental literacy task force. The aquarium, which is in Newport, and hopefully many of you have been there, not once, but more than once. And they are cited now as one of the top 10 national aquariums in the country. Founded as an independent nonprofit organization engaging visitors and students, in fact, about 50,000 or 500,000 visit the aquarium each year across Oregon. And there, people really get acquainted with the many benefits that the ocean allows all of us, and learning the tremendous balance between the benefits and our Oregon coastal environments. So we are in the environmental education business now, both in the Newport facility, so when you visit the aquarium, but even more importantly, we are getting out and in and around counties and schools across the state. The elements of our curriculum include programs for pre-K all the way up to college. Last year, 40,000 students benefited from the curriculum in 100 schools in 27 Oregon counties. So again, I guess one of the other examples I'd like to share with you is the partnership that we have with the Lincoln County School District. One teacher in particular I met has a very ambitious goal of making her fifth grade class the most ocean literate in the entire United States. So good for her. So the Oregon Coast Aquarium applauds this bill. We would look to be a part of the task force, or even as importantly, be a resource, particularly as it relates to ocean literacy. So I just think this is a phenomenal, great idea for all kids in Oregon, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Harker, right under the wire.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Glad I made it.
Me too.
As a member of the, on the other side of my life, my business life, as a member of the OBA, I would support raising my OBA dues a bit if the OBA were going to put some money into this. There are 72, not to put just you on the spot, but there are 72 organizations here. If they put in on an average about $700 a piece, we'd be there.
Madam Chair, but we would have to have an amendment that would permit the Department of Education to accept grants.
Representative Maurer, would you like to request the amendment to allow foundation and other money?
Yes, I will. I'm looking as Morgan. Okay. Yes.
He went to lunch.
He went to lunch.
Yes, he went to get a cookie and a Diet Coke.
Morgan said it was possible. He said it could be.
Are there further questions for this panel? No, thank you very much. So, colleagues, if we get the amendment back, allowing some flexibility to request foundation dollars, is this group comfortable working this bill as soon as we can get the amendments back? And Representative Maurer?
I do apologize, but I mean, it's serious about the money.
Yes.
I mean, we could pass it out of here, and it's just not going to go anywhere. If there's a price tag on it, and it's not reading, writing, and arithmetic. So I just...
He raises a point.
The maximum flexibility, and if organizations can step forward, then this probably is salvageable.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Point of clarification to Representative Maurer. In this concept that you're promoting, the idea is that it doesn't preclude the department from putting some money, but it also provides them an avenue to collect other people's money. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and you know, certainly no expert, but in a lot of bills, there's little provision that says that it permits the whoever, department of whatever, to accept grants, gifts. You know, that's pretty broad language in order for something to happen.
Okay.
And
so one is not precluded for the other. It's inclusive of both mechanisms.
Yeah, and usually people know going in that it's either funded by general fund or it's not going anywhere unless it's funded by grant.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Comp.
On that same line, the key word is may.
Correct. Correct.
As long as you have the word may, you've got it.
Okay.
Well, with that, we'll work on getting that amendment drafted and schedule this for a work session. This clearly won't go to the floor from here. It will go to Ways and Means, where they're... Yes, Representative Rivlin?
To get it zeroed, there is no money requested at all. It doesn't have to go to Ways and Means. I mean, we have to talk to the speaker, but...
Correct.
Correct. are we through with the
Madam Chair, my only is with the people that are new and understand the process is that if we could get it to a zero fiscal, then I think, you know, our whole, if there's any argument, kind of goes away. So the question is whether Department of Education can figure out how to get it to zero or there's another funding mechanism. But that always helps.
Yeah, thanks.
And I think a piece of that is looking at the people who are named to participate here. And a couple of the organizations talked about their willingness to participate without compensation or reimbursement for mileage. And I think that's part of how the technology task force got down to the $7,000 fiscal. You always need the staff person that's running the copies and organizing people, getting them all pointed in the same direction. But there's probably ways we can continue to work to get the fiscal down. And
Representative Gilser, the only other comment that I'd make from the Ways and Means perspective, if you have somebody coming from another state agency and they put it in their budget, I mean, excuse me, you're just moving the shell.
Excellent point, Representative Comp. Good news for us, Representative Comp is the chair of the sub, and so she will make sure that we don't get too far afield in trying to play shell games here.
Right.
Darn it. I thought we could pull some tricky stuff here.
No, you just can't send it to Ag and expect that they can cover it either.
Right. Any further discussion on this bill? Great. Thank you all very much, and thanks for all of the wonderful testimony. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2544 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2533. Representative Huffman, would you like to go to the...
Thank you.
I would, Madam Chair.
...form and get us up to date.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. John Huffman, Representative for District 59. And thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to bring forth 2533 to you today and discuss this. And I so look forward to questions from Representative Maurer. So I might as well get that out of the way up front. Representative Maurer, I'm looking for $4.4 million. Okay?
Okay. Is he Republican? Okay.
And Chair Gelser, there. It wasn't that funny. Is there a sign up? Because I know that Justin Martin, there are a few people, or a couple of people, interested in.
So we're going to send this back to the back. There's only one person signed up now, but if you'd like to speak, please sign in.
Okay. Basically, this bill has to do with remote and necessary schools. And if you've got a copy of the bill, it actually defines what a remote and necessary school is. Sometimes I refer to them as frontier schools because they're few and far between. They're actually, thanks to Morgan, he just provided me the list, there are 20 remote and necessary schools throughout the state of Oregon. And those would be schools that have a ADM of less than 110 students, and that is for the entire district, not just one building, not just elementary school, but the entire district. And they have to be located by the nearest traveled road more than 20 miles from the nearest school or from a city with a population of less than 5,000 people. So that kind of defines what remote and necessary is. Like I said, there are 20 of them, and I can make this list available to all committee members. A number of them are in my district, which is probably why it's top of the mind awareness for me. And as the economy struggles, the remote and necessary school districts struggle even more. And one of the greatest struggles, Representative Maurer, is coming before this committee, presenting a need and a request for a significant amount of money, $2.2 million for the fiscal year beginning July 1st of this year, and another $2.2 million for the fiscal year beginning in July 1st, 2010. Knowing what the constraints are on the state finances, it's difficult to come and ask for this money. But I do come and ask because the need is great, as all of our school districts are suffering and wondering how in the world they're going to cut back to make ends meet this year, and then how in the world are they going to get the doors open for next school year. Somehow, some way, most of those districts are going to find a way to do it. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be tough. Some people are probably going to lose their jobs. But with the remote and necessaries that we're talking about here, there are literally schools that will not be here 2 years from now. That's how dire it is. One of the remote necessaries is in Paisley. It has, last count, 82 students. And Paisley is way down south. It's 50 miles north of Lakeview, I believe, and 50 miles south of something else. It's just a district unto itself. And one of the big questions always asked of me is, well, why don't these districts just combine with the nearest district? There is no near district. There's really nowhere for these school districts to go. And so what's represented in one of these remote necessary schools? It's, and I'm going to pull names out of the air, but I'm sure they're very applicable depending on the district you go to. But let's just say maybe you've got Long Creek, and Sharon Livingston is a rancher, cattle rancher, in the Long Creek area. And Johnny works for Sharon, helping with ranch duties. And Johnny has two kids going to the Long Creek school. And Long Creek has lost student population over the last few years from roughly 65 to 38 or 39. And as you can imagine, as we fund schools on a per-student headcount, ADMW, it's weighted for rural schools, but not nearly enough for the remote and necessaries. As you lose student population, your funding just keeps decreasing as each child leaves for a different school district because dad's out of work at the mill or whatever the problem is in that community. And yet the brick-and-mortar costs continue, and with a lot of our expenses from reporting and No Child Left Behind, you still have to have X number of teachers inside those walls to teach the students. So their overhead can only go so low. And these 20 school districts throughout the state have met and gone below that threshold already. And I haven't checked in with each school district, but I'm not sure even at this point, without assistance, how many of them will not be able to open even this coming fall, much less another year from now. So that's the case. On page 2, I believe it is, it outlines, maybe it's page 3. Page 3 outlines the financial impact and what the bill is asking for. And some of these schools have reached out, and there are experts on the panel that are much more knowledgeable about this than I am, but some of these school districts, like Fossil, have gone by way of charter school. I think charter school is, again, just another temporary fix for the school districts because it doesn't relieve them of all the mandates. And there's just a situation out there where some school districts need just a little more money to survive. That's it for me for now. And I'd like to, maybe Justin could guide the next panel who is going to come up and testify on behalf of this. I know we have a representative from the Portland Public School Board.
Great. So why don't you come on forward. Thank you, Representative Huffman. Are there any questions for Representative Huffman before he goes away? Representative Van Orman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Huffman, is Maupin on that list?
Maupin is not.
Okay, so
let me run. You want me to run down just really quickly?
Please.
Adele, Annex, School District 29. That's Adele is School District 21. Annex, School District 29. Arlington, School District 3. Arock, School District 81. Ashwood, School District 8. Black Butte, School District 41. Burnt River, School District 30J. Dayville, School District 16. Fossil, District 21. Harper, District 26. Huntington, District 16J. Jordan Valley, School District 3. Juntura. Yeah, we're talking Frontier here. School District 12, Long Creek, School District 17, Mitchell, District 55, Monument, District 8, Paisley, District 11, Pinehurst, District 94, Plush, District 18, Spray, District 1, Troy, District 54, Ukiah, District 80R. So approximately half of them are in my district.
Great. Welcome, Bobby Reagan. Would you please introduce yourself for the record?
Sure. I'm Bobby Reagan, and I am a school board member from Portland, Oregon. I think I'm your panel, so just so you know. Chair Gelser, members of this committee. I'm here today representing the Portland School District. Portland Public Schools, Oregon's largest school district, is pleased again this year to support bipartisan legislative efforts to support Oregon's smallest and most remote school districts. My colleagues and I often say that every student in Portland, at every school, in every zip code, deserves an excellent education. Our support of House Bill 2533 extends that philosophy to every corner of Oregon. It's been a couple of years, but I remember with great fondness the visit I made with my then board co-chair Dan Ryan and former superintendent Vicki Phillips to Fossil, Oregon, at the invitation of Paisley Superintendent Mark Jeffrey. There we met with superintendents and some board members from Fossil, Paisley, Ukiah, Jordan Valley, Spray, Harper, Mitchell, Monument, Huntington, and other communities. Each of those school districts may have a fraction of the students compared to our smallest school in Portland, but we share common concerns. Declining enrollment has shaved our already tight budgets, and all districts, large and small, urban and remote, are troubled by the prospect of the damage our current economic collapse will have on our funding and on our students. This legislation will not solve the long-term problems facing these districts and many others across Oregon, but it will provide short-term relief and hopefully allow their survival through the next difficult few years. These school districts, small and far from their neighbors, form the heart and soul of their communities. They are not only the centers of learning, but they are where generations gather to watch athletic competitions, enjoy student performances, celebrate with neighbors, and most importantly, form community. In this year, the 150th anniversary of Oregon statehood, It is fitting to salute the tradition of our pioneers and our rural history by supporting the schools that are the lifeblood of their communities. I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify. Portland Public Schools strongly supports House Bill 2533.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there questions? Representative Comp.
Tough questions. These aren't softballs. These are hardballs. Do you know what the average per student spending is for this comparative group?
I don't.
And then the follow-up would be, what would be the increased amount of student spending for this comparative group? And I don't think any of you want to know how much is already being spent per student in some of these school districts.
Yeah, we do.
It's up to $20,000 and above per student.
Representative Kump, may I respond?
Please.
When I first moved to Portland, we actually were in an elementary school called Skyline Elementary School, and our kids were bused to that school, and it was an hour bus ride each way, each day. It was too much for us at first. A two-hour bus ride for a two-and-a-half-hour kindergarten day didn't make any sense for us, and we chose not to do it. What you're looking at if you close some of these school districts is having bus rides that are far, far worse than what we experienced. And from November through March, as a parent, I can't imagine trying to do an hour or two-hour bus ride each day, each way for kids. So I do understand that there's an enormous expense involved, but I think that if you close these schools and these school districts, you're going to shutter the towns.
Well, and yes, thank you. Well, my comment would be is I have a deep appreciation for small school districts, and when we do the balance, though, can we look at the funding formula and do something that's more equitable than what we're doing? I don't know. I don't know the answer. I really don't. And it's a really tough question.
Exactly.
I mean, these are vital to a community. They are absolutely vital to a community.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hucker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, agreement with Representative Comp's comments. And I understand what you're saying, the severity of these decisions. On the other hand, we just gave somebody a pretty hard time.
I hear
creative thinking, but a pretty hard time about $50K. Now I understand that's 2.5 students in one of these schools compared to a statewide program. Right?
Mm-hmm. Representative Gelson, may I respond?
Yes, please.
I guess I look at this bill as the equivalent of a leave no district behind. We have to make incredibly difficult decisions, but I don't know how you leave some schools, some kids, some districts out.
I don't yet know that either.
I know.
Representative Roblin.
And it's a question you may not have the answer for, maybe Morgan, but my understanding is if the school district goes away, there is no requirement for those students to go to school. Because they are so far, there is no school district. We have requirements that if we don't transport them, if there's other kinds of things, and there's no school district, then the requirements we've had, which puts us, in, I think, in a strange place in our state, where we have places where families could live, but no school is really offered. Because that's kind of what I'm hearing, if I believe that to be correct.
And I think that's, sorry if I could
respond. No, please, yeah.
I think that's why I think there's a fear that you might be shuttering these towns. Because as a parent, I don't know that it would be acceptable not to send your child to school, so you're going to have to make some moves to make it happen.
Chief Representative Maurer.
Madam Chair, I look at this, I did not know that.
I'm pretty sure that's true. I'll check with Morgan. Morgan's not sure about that either, but I think there's some requirements that we have to do things or that I don't know what you can do with the parent.
Well, but this, I mean, in crisis you get opportunities to make, you know, broad, noble changes in how we do things. And you know, I find that the way we deliver education today is fundamentally the same as we did it 75 years ago. And at some point, things change, and they have changed, and maybe we need to look at different models. I think the crisis, because this is a crisis, because they will close.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just no doubt that they will close.
Yep.
And so there's got to be alternative ways. I mean, I don't know what they are, but it has to exist, and we've got to allow the framework for these changes to, you know, bubble up. It's a sad situation.
Thank you. Representative Norman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The reason I asked about Maupin is because I started a Head Start Center years ago in Tie Valley, which is, in my opinion, I figured it was pretty remote, and I thought it would be smaller. I think that we have changed how we fund schools when Measure 5 came into being, and we're limited to $5 at the local level. I think a lot of these schools are in Eastern Oregon, and I think one of the issues that they face is value has not particularly changed in the property. So they're not generating that much in the property tax. And then, you know, if you're also being paid for by the number of children you serve, that also restricts what you're able to do. And I can tell you, having served in rural Oregon, we transported three-year-olds on buses for an hour and a half to 2 hours, and that's a terribly long time for kids. It's too long. And you ask yourself, why do people live there? Well, because that's where they've lived for years. That's where their family is. That's where they live. And I understand what Representative Comp is saying. I know it's extremely expensive, but I also think that it's also the problems of the schools are also reflective of our inability to provide some worthwhile endeavors to the environment or to the economic health of Eastern Oregon. I think the schools are paying for it, the communities are paying for it, the viability of the eastern side of the state is at risk. It's not just the schools. So I'm very, very sympathetic to these rural schools because I've served the parents there, and I know how valuable those schools are to these people. And I don't know what the answer is either, but I'm not sure that I could be the one to turn my back on them.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I almost hesitate in asking this, John, but as I look at Section 2, subsection 3, well, 2, subsection 2 also, it talks about these grants will be awarded. And the language in probably lines 14 through 24, at least on my understanding, seems fairly vague. And I'm trying to get at how this is computed, and you came up with the fiscal of, I think, 2.1 per fiscal year. So I guess I'm asking you to help me get from this language, which talks about grants, well, it throws out the figure 200,000, and I know there's a lot of language there. How do we get from this language to the fiscal you're talking about?
Are you talking about the specific verbiage here or the answer? Because I'm coming before the committee more interested in a solution, at least a temporary fix. Let's insert whatever numbers those need to be. Honestly, these numbers were left over from Representative Dallum in the 2007 session. So they have not been bumped up. I just used his framework for this bill. And Representative Springer, I told Representative Gelzer, I just wanted to get the discussion going and show what the need is. And we have to do something this session. Otherwise, these school districts are going to close. Is it fair to everybody else? No, because this temporary fix will penalize every other school district in the state. I realize that. We all do. And as I've visited with most of you on the committee individually, you know, we've talked about that. It's not a really fair solution, but until we can come up with a different way of doing business, possibly like Representative Maurer was talking about, maybe, or Representative Hart. Well, anyway, I think several brought it up. Maybe we're not doing business the way we need to in the remote school districts. You know, maybe we do need to incorporate some online learning or something in conjunction with, and we actually create a different model for the remote necessaries. I don't think we have time to do that in the next few months to actually create this brand new model. I think it desperately needs to be done in the interim, and I would encourage that. I'm looking for something for this fiscal go-around.
Thank you.
Let me qualify my remarks just a little bit here. The language is a little concerning just because I want to make sure it does what it is we're wanting it to do. But let me make no mistake and qualify my remarks that my prior life as a deputy sheriff, I patrolled many of those small districts that you just named. And the school is absolutely vital to the health and well-being of some of those communities. And let's remember that, albeit not high, those are communities that pay property taxes also. So there are some financial benefits there. And, yes, this does cost more. It definitely does than Portland schools or my schools. So let me qualify that. I certainly feel that concern with those smaller districts and see the viability that they give to their communities.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
Representative Springer, were you concerned about the vagueness about what the money might be used for within the district?
Or that might be a piece of it, and I think probably I just need to get with some of our policy analysts and look at that. I just want to make sure it's the language that you want to represent where you want to go. And it seemed a little vague to me.
Thank you, Representative Springer. Representative Dimbro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the need to support our rural Oregonians is really important for us. It's not an issue that we face alone as a state, right? I mean, I'm sure this is an issue that is pervasive in many states, you know, which have large expanses of rural areas. And I'm wondering, do we know how other states are handling this? And I'm not sure who to ask this, but how other states are handling their rural schools, and is there are there federal programs that support rural schools as well? Is that an initiative that we're pursuing, or you know, could be pursuing through our representatives?
Chair Gelser, Representative Dimbro, my hope is that a lot of those answers would, and I guess in part I'm asking for a task force to seriously take on this issue and come up with a solution for the remote and necessary schools. I don't know what all is available out there. I'm certain that the Department of Education has, you know, probably turned over every rock up to this point.
Representative Comp.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. I first of all, I want to share my appreciation for you to bring this topic to the table. And the other point that I would make is I just love children and want to make sure that they all have a good future. And the last point would be is our Constitution of Oregon says we will provide a public school education for our children. So we have a responsibility as members of this body to provide that. And so that's, yeah, you're bringing the issue forward that we need to address somehow.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Huffman.
I would be more than happy to investigate this a little more and actually contact each district and try to narrow the scope of the ask to find out if you know, if each school district can survive on whatever, whatever that number is, you know, if it comes in at 1.4 million per year rather than 2.2, I'd be happy to do that investigation and try to narrow it down.
And I think that would be helpful. I'm racking my brain. I'm from the state of Nevada originally, and I'm trying to remember how it works there, where you also have these extraordinarily remote areas where you have only a handful of families. So I'd be interested in knowing how what the mechanics are in other states that really do have truly frontier and remote areas that have children in them. Representative Rivlin.
Yeah, a couple things. One, we need to figure out a solution to this problem that doesn't have it coming back every year, because I know when we had it last time and your predecessor brought it forward, I think we worked out, and one of the conversations then was, what about the ESDs? Can they do some of this stuff so that we don't have multiple different people running as superintendents? Mostly superintendents also teach, so people know, and oftentimes drive the bus as well. So, I mean, they're not, it's not that they aren't busy, but the reality is...
And answer the phone.
The reality is, you know, can ESDs remotely have responsibilities to do this kind of stuff? And I hope you'll look into that. But you asked the question about other districts, and I will say, in this state... I wasn't here, but I know that before we passed ballot measure 550 and 47 and property taxes paid, some of those districts did pretty well because they were based on a natural resource extraction economy. And so there was timber, which helped pay for Portland and other places because the money went the other way. And since those have gone away, it's been more difficult for them to have the revenue base that they had before. There's one district that still has, I think they have a couple hundred percent carryover in the state, and it's a small school. I think it's Jewell, because they still have revenues that come in because there is still harvesting that takes place in their district. And compared to the size, they don't get any money from the state. I mean, all of it comes from their local harvest and property taxes. So I guess part of the solution over time is to have economies in these places that allow for taxes to be paid. So I would hope we would also make sure that we can continue to have conversations about, you know, how do we get some of the traditional economies back, and how do we start using some of the natural resources? If you look at many of the places you mentioned, there are forests around them. They may not be owned by us, but they are owned by a government body. And so if there was more harvesting, if there was the opportunity to have some of that severance taxes and other kinds of things, might help some of these rural schools. And I think that happens in other states.
Chair Gelser, Representative Roblin, well put. Very well put. Very well put. And Madam Chair, I'd really like to thank Bobby and Portland Public Schools for testifying today and recognizing that they do have counterparts out in the remote reaches. And I just really appreciate Justin Martin and his client for recognizing that and stepping forward to support it today. So thank you.
Thank you. And I think we have one more comment from Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And John, you stole my remarks. I just wanted to say thank you, Bobby, because I know being in the school board world for many years, there's sometimes that tug between small and large. And sometimes it's easy for school boards to be maybe envious of Portland being a larger district. And so I appreciate you being here on behalf of other students. Thank you.
And I have to tell you that our visit to Fossil made a huge difference in my perspective. It was great. And we're trying to do more and more of that outreach all the time. We have so much more in common than we have differences.
Very well stated.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. And I also have Brian Reeder signed up to come and speak with us.
Declining enrollment schools, Portland is becoming.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. Brian Reeder from the Department of Education. I was unable to get a hold of Representative Huffman on Friday or this morning. I had a couple of suggestions for language that I think would make some of the qualifications a little more clear. I can either present those to you now or work with Representative Huffman outside of the committee setting to suggest those. At the chair's pleasure.
I think if they're broad general themes, it would be helpful for us to hear them.
No, they're rather detailed.
Honesty is always good.
Yeah, the devil's in the details, and we have a little bit of devil in the details here, just in some of the wording, to make sure it's doing what the representative intends it to do.
And I think that would be a great thing to work with Representative Huffman with offline. Do you have information about the issue that Representative Roblin raised about whether or not compulsory attendance would apply to a student where there was no school that they could attend?
Chair Gelser, my understanding, although I'm not schooled in law maybe as well as I should be, is that every part of Oregon is required to be in a school district and serve students, educate students. So if a school district were to simply have to shut down because it was financially not viable, I believe there is a process where that land area, that local government entity, would be absorbed or merged into some other school district so that every part of the state is actually being served.
And so it goes back to transportation.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Morgan.
Chair Gelser, again, for the record, Morgan Allen, Department of Education. I was just going to echo Mr. Reeder's comments. We were sort of looking at some stuff, and we're pretty sure we would. We're 99.9999% sure that we'd have to provide them an education. But the second thing we just wanted to bring up, too, is that, and I can't remember the bill number off the top of my head, and I could get it for Roxy at a later time, but the Legislative Revenue Office is in the process of producing a report that this committee might find informative about small and remote schools and funding mechanisms and things like that, and neither Mr. Reeder or I have seen a copy of that, and we're not sure if it's out yet, but Steve Meyer in the Legislative Revenue Office might, you know, be a good follow-up to have him come and make a presentation to this committee, so we just wanted to mention that briefly.
Thank you, Representative Roblin.
We have one school district continuing that still has its own boarding school, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that is another option for a school district.
Chair Gelser, Representative Roblin, there are school districts in Eastern Oregon that have a boarding option, and there are some school districts that have, I mean, there's a myriad of boarding options, but yes, those exist.
Thank you. Any further, Representative Dimbro?
Can I ask a question? So do you have a sense of the expense of the boarding option? Is that, I would assume that's pretty high as well.
Chair Gelser, Representative Dembro, I don't have that information off the top of my head. We do have financial statements from the district that does that, so certainly we could dig into their financial statements and get an understanding of how much they're spending compared to other districts.
That would be great. Thanks, Bert.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you both very much. Is there anyone else that would like to be heard on this bill before we close the public hearing? Representative Huffman, thank you very much for bringing this bill before us and raising this issue. I think we certainly have a lot of work to do. There's the tension that's been raised about the cost and then also our obligation. One of the things that is most incredible, I think, not just about our state but about our nation, is our commitment to a free and appropriate public education for every student, regardless of where they live or what their abilities are. And making that happen for kids is an extraordinary challenge that our school districts struggle with every day in implementing the details, and that obviously the legislature struggles with as well. So with that, I thank you all for coming today, and I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2533. And before I adjourn the House Committee on Education, a couple of heads up on next week on Monday, which is the 23rd, we are taking a field trip during the committee time over to the Oregon School for the Blind to learn more about that. It's kind of going to be a whole week about the Oregon School for the Blind. On Wednesday then, Morgan and folks from the Department of Ed will be here to talk a little bit about the programming at the School for the Blind, the budget at the School for the Blind, and on Friday we will be having students visiting us from other parts of the state that have similar disabilities to talk about, and their families and teachers talk about the services that they receive through their regional programs and in their
their local public schools. That week on Wednesday, because it's also around the time, there's also the issue of the potential co-location of the School for the Blind and the School for the Deaf going on in the background. My understanding is that this Friday, the State Board of Education is going to rule on an appeal. There may be a significant desire for public testimony in regards to all of the issues swirling around this. So we have scheduled, and if you'll just go ahead and mark on your calendar, on Wednesday the 25th to reconvene at 5:15 p.m. so that we can receive all of that testimony and make sure that all of the folks who would like to be heard about these issues can be heard.
Wednesday.
And, yes, Representative Maurer.
Madam Chair, I will not be here Monday the 23rd as the Health Care Committee is on the road.
Correct. I think Representative Greenluck and I negotiated that vice chairs go with their committees since there's a lot of cross-population between the two committees, so we are losing the men on the far left.
Sorry.
Representative Maurer and Representative Herger. But hopefully you'll be able to join us that evening on Wednesday
Absolutely.
The 25th.
But I get to stay.
Sorry. Representative Springer.
Just a point of clarification, so this field trip will be confined within the 1 to 3
yes.
time frame.
Yes, that will be confined within our regular committee time. If you have other questions, feel free to get with me, and I'll get you more information. But we've got a lot of new bills coming to the committee, a lot of work to do, and we're just getting started. I'll adjourn the Committee on Education.
Did you want to talk?